Radio Influence. The future is now.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Dark to Light podcast with...
Sunny Friday. Sunny Friday, Val, and...
Beans! We have a big stack show today. Very busy show. Very, 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 very busy. And we're going to get it right.
Great guests, great topics, good stuff.
Yeah, so we've got Svetlana Lakova joining us now, and after that, you'll hear the rest of the show. She's no introduction necessary at this point. If you've been a listener for any amount of time, you know how great she is. And she's selling a book. Go to spygateexposed.com and pick it up. It's a wonderful read. And without further ado, Frank, let's get on to our interview with Svetlana.
Let's do it.
So we are super excited to be joined by now good friend Svetlana Lakova, who has a new book out, Spygate Exposed, which you can purchase on her website at spygate-exposed.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. Svetlana, thanks for coming back with us again.
Thank you, Tracy. Thank you, Frank, for having me.
It's great to have you.
Yeah, definitely. And it's super exciting because you were nice enough to allow Uncover DC to publish a chapter of your book. And I love it because I haven't read the whole thing yet. Bear with me. But the first, before the chapter start, you have such amazing quotes and Bible verse and all kinds of great stuff to set up the chapter. How did you come about that? What made you do that in the book?
I happen to be an author, so you, of course, and your listeners know about me because I was the woman who was falsely accused of being this seductress who compromised General Flynn on behalf of Russian intelligence. That's the false stories that were being spread by me, Spygate villains. But actually, I'm none of those things. I'm a historian. I'm a writer. And that's what my job is to be able to tell history, to tell what happened to the widest possible audience in a way that people can appreciate, in a way that as if people were there, and in a way that people can understand the significance.
It's different than other books like this that I've read, and that's why I chose to talk about it right now, because it gives you this tone that sets the rest of the chapter up. You feel something when you read that. You know what I'm saying? So it's just really a great touch to the book. I love it. It's one of my favorite things.
Thank you. And to me also, the Christian theme has been very, very important to this book, because it really is this fight where my story and story of other humans involved in it, they're all horrible individual stories, but there is a bigger fight going on for our souls in all of this. And that's why I thought the Bible suits that, because obviously all of that has been thought through by someone before. And that's what the Bible teaching represent, and it's amazing how they fit with this story, which really is the battle for good.
Yeah, yeah. So let's get into some nitty gritty, and then we'll get into some other sort of dramatic things that have gone on over the past goodness knows couple of weeks and months. We were talking about David Kramer. David Kramer was the McCain compadre, for lack of a better word, who was responsible for getting together with Christopher Steele, taking another version of the dossier, not physically getting together with him, but taking another version of the dossier back and laundering it through McCain into the State Department and elsewhere. But when we were looking through Kramer's testimony, we realized that you were a big part of what he had to say because of General Flynn. So it kind of encompasses the whole Spygate story in this little bit. Explain it to us, because you do such a great job of this.
Thank you, Tracy. And of course, it's you actually who, among all the other things you do with social media and the podcast, you're actually behind the scenes. Tracy is this amazing, and I can say this as a historian myself, she has this amazing ability to read lots of very, very long documents.
Oh, indeed. I know. For fun. Seemingly right. For fun.
Shut up.
Right? Exactly. Which makes her a historian and an expert among other things. And so Tracy brought this document, the first person to brought this document to my attention. And just very briefly, why this document also, why do we even get to see it? Why is it so important right now? The document is dated December 2017, when various people were giving testimonies to the House Intel Committee. Which by that stage, unfortunately, was being chaired by Shifty Adam Schiff. And Adam Schiff then sat on those documents for 3 years without letting us know, ask the public know what was in those testimonies. And then, thanks to amazing work of Rick Grinnell, who at that point was recently, up until recently, was Director of National Intelligence, acting Director of National Intelligence, that was declassified just literally about a month ago. It was declassified by Rick Grinnell. And the importance of this document is that, and we can see why Schiff didn't want us to see it, is because David Cramer, so David Cramer, he was the person who brought the dossier and the allegation and the other still allegations to McCain after the election, and that was brought to FBI Director Comey by McCain. And the importance of this specific section is that under oath, David Cramer is talking about General Flynn having an affair with a Russian woman in the United Kingdom. So literally, was when I was sent this document by you, Tracy, I kind of fell off my chair, despite the fact that I'm used to, you know, all sorts of things, because I'm that woman.
I know, it's so weird.
And yes. I have not had the affair with General Flynn, but so the story is false, and it's shocking that this is now part of, testimony of congressional record. That's right. And 4 times, I believe I counted. But what's so shocking about that, that actually happens to be a lie that was manufactured by somebody called Stephen Halper. And Stephen Halper was masquerading as a professor at my university in Cambridge in UK, but he was actually a dirty trickster for the Democrats, and he was at the same time an FBI informer, confidential human source. And he was the one who set up that lie just before the election in order to dirty up General Flynn and connect him with Russia. In order to, also help to get, help Hillary Clinton to get at Donald Trump. And then that allegation in its turn, and I think we talked about that last time, Tracy, when I was on air with you, that lie made it into the official FBI record, where Stephen Halper said that Stephen Halper, witnessed me in Cambridge, seducing General Flynn, getting into a cab with him, going to the night, and that I was somehow connected with prominent members of Russian government. None of that is true, but that formed the predicate, this false fake story by Halper formed the predicate that before election, the FBI started Russia counter-espionage investigation onto General Flynn. And that story sat there because it was not true. And there was, nobody would, of course, confirm it. And then after the election, when the clearly it became desperate for them to delegitimize Donald Trump, that's what General Flynn said after the election, is that the reason why there's all of this horrible media and other narratives against General Flynn is because actually they're trying to get at Donald Trump to delegitimize the fact that the American people elected him. So in order to do that, the coup plotters, by this stage after the election, it becomes a coup rather than just election meddling. The coup plotters decide to recycle the very same lie which was given to them by Halper. And somehow, Halper gives it to Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele gives it to David Cramer. David Cramer gives it to John McCain. And John McCain gives it to Director Comey. And bang, here they have two independently verified sources.
Saying the same thing,
except both of them are lies. And except the only one source, which is Stephen Halper, who wasn't even there at the dinner where I met General Flynn once in my life in 2014. And so after the election, they use this, and this is very Spygate, right? This is circular reporting. So you manufacture a lie, then you put it out through different channels, and then they also leak the same story to the media, and now they had 3, 4, 5 instances of the same story. That allowed them to restart surveillance on General Flynn after the election, including, for example, unmaskings on him in early December and other things. And the mess that that General Flynn is in today due to this call with Russian Ambassador Kislyak, which happened at the end of December, is a direct result of that, because by the time they obtained the tape of his call with Russian Ambassador, they already set him up as somebody who was recruited by
Russia,
based on this fake story, recruited by Russia. And I was supposed to be a recruiter, because the two things that, you know, Halper and then people who Halper connected with, what they said is not only that I seduced General Flynn, which is a lie, but also that I'm connected to prominent members of Russian government, which is also a lie, and that I work for Russian intelligence, also a lie. But they needed that lie because they didn't have any Russians in Russia collusion stories. So they created me. And that way, by the time... they took basically my name, they took my fact that I was born in Moscow, and that's it, nothing else. I'm not connected to the Russian government, I'm not connected to the Russian intelligence, I'm not connected with anything like that, I'm just a historian, you know, I was living in Britain, a British citizen. But they took that because they were so desperate and made it into that I recruited General Flynn for Russian intelligence. And then that allowed them, by the time he's talking on the phone with Ambassador Kislyak, they'd allowed them to make that outrageous claim that General Flynn is a traitor to this country, to America, to his country, and that he was not representing U.S. interests, he was representing Russian interests when he was on the phone with Kislyak. And that's a very, very sad story, but that's a sort of microcosm of the whole Spygate, which is lie upon lie upon lie, all to delegitimize Donald Trump.
You know, Frank, you got a question?
No, I'm still just marveling at the whole thing. You know, Svetlana, you always come on and you always deliver amazing pieces of puzzles of the puzzle that we don't usually we deal with these huge gigantic pieces, but what you provide always gives amazing context to other offshoot plot lines that needed to support and give legitimacy or the air of legitimacy to what the greater scam was about the whole Russia thing. So I always am just so fascinated by listening to this. And then, of course, the other thing is I always try to empathize with you by putting myself in the shoes of a person who has had their entire life reimagined by a group of international spies that need a fall person. It's so surreal to me how I have to try to empathize with that scenario that you're in. How it's just amazing.
Well, well, first of all, thank you for your kind words. But secondly, I'm actually same shoes as you, because I'm watching this whole thing and I still don't understand how this is all, you know, happening to me. And remember, this is why, you know, my new book, Spygate Exposed, is also so important, is I happen to know the coup plotters, right? Because a lot of them were actually located out of all places at Cambridge University in England, where I was just a research student there. I was completing my PhD, writing books, articles about, you know, events that happened 100 years ago. That's my job, right? Working in archives, teaching Cambridge students. And then it transpired that the group of old men in Cambridge, which included American Stephen Halper and my own mentor of 20 years, Professor Christopher Andrew, they were actually plotting to somehow, first of all, interfere, you know, before the election, you know, against Donald Trump, and then after the election to delegitimize him. And also these people, of course, all these characters are connected with Christopher Steele, you know, the former British spy who is responsible for the dossier that we're discussing, and other false allegations. So for me, it's absolutely bizarre that I was actually, without knowing that, I was at the ground hero of this Russia collusion hoax. But that, of course, also after I found out about all of that, that makes me a witness, right? Because I was there at the start of how they were setting it up. I just didn't realize it. And of course, now I do, which is why I wrote the book. And what's interesting about that is that, you know, you'd think that if you're investigating Russia collusion, because remember who Halper was. Halper was the chief investigator for the FBI. Why would you be in Cambridge? Why would the FBI hire someone who would be in England as this 70-plus-year-old retired, you know, academic, he says. He's not an academic. He's a dirty trickster. Why would he be your, like, main guy for Russia collusion? Remember, he claims that he knows General Flynn. He doesn't, but they open investigation into General Flynn, espionage investigation into General Flynn because of Halper. He then lures Carter Page, Trump advisor Carter Page, to Trump campaign advisor Carter Page to Cambridge and sets him up. He then lures George Papadopoulos, another Trump campaign advisor, also to England, also sets him up. And then we, of course, have Christopher Steele repeating Halper lies. And all of that, for some reason, is happening in England, right? So why is this so-called investigation into this, interference in U.S. Election is happening in England? And why are the only two people that the FBI, with all of these resources, managed to hire are two known liars, leakers, who both are working for the Obama and Hillary campaign administration?
You know, the craziest thing, before we get into what happened with this book, because I think it's important, whatever you can share with us, I the thing that I found, like, last week about Perkins Coie and that testimony in the Alpha Bank case. So Christopher Steele gives testimony overseas, and he says that Perkins Coie was hired Fusion GPS because they wanted to be able to have a legal challenge to the election results if Donald Trump won based on Russian interference. Christopher Steele was hired by Fusion GPS in June of 2016. And in that same court case, Svetlana, I'm reading through and I'm seeing, like, they're asking Christopher Steele, why in your memo 112, which is the memo about Alpha Bank, why did you feel that these people were Russian oligarchs, or what made you think they were criminals, paraphrasing? And every single thing that he lists is media reports from years ago, some of which were Glenn Simpson's Wall Street Journal pieces. They've been doing this for years. For years, they've been doing this.
Well, that's correct. And this is why it's so important, because if you even also look at the Cramer testimony, it's the same thing, where he gives a list of the publication, which is New York Times, Washington Post, The Guardian in UK. And these are precisely the outfits that attacked me, attacked General Flynn, attacked Carter Page. Because remember that the media is a very, very important part of it, where you have three sort of key parts of Russia hoax, right? And as you say, this team, so to speak, this loose team of people or of plotters have been doing this for years. So they know how to do it, which is the political dirty tricks. So remember that Halper's speciality since the 1980s, at least, has been attempting to fix elections. And he's a Washington swamp creature, worked in the State Department. So he understands how the political side works. But he also happens to be son-in-law of one of the CIA founders, right? And CIA is relatively good at fixing elections abroad. And it looks like, you know, with the involvement of John Brennan, they just imported that whole technique back home, right? So Halper knows all of that. Then, of course, we have Christopher Steele, who, of course, himself is a former British spy. But his other huge advantage, and again, he's been doing, as you pointed out, for years, is he has contacts for years into the State Department and to the FBI, because he'll collaborate for them before. So if you want any information to be fed into the State Department, into Justice Department, remember his connection with the war, into FBI, you choose Christopher Steele. So you don't choose him for his amazing, detective skills, right? You choose him to feed information, or the disinformation, into various government departments, right? So that's Christopher Steele's role. And then the third one, which is the other evil genius, is Glenn Simpson, who knows precisely how the press operates, and he's this master manipulator of the press. And so you have these three three strands, which is the political dirty tricks, the intelligence, you know, the espionage dirty tricks, and the media dirty tricks. And they combine the three, first of all, to try and fix the election. And secondly, after they didn't succeed, because the MAGA movement was stronger than all of that, luckily, then they tried to delegitimize Donald Trump. And that's really sort of Spygate in a nutshell. And I think what's also very interesting is, again, you know, if you specifically look at Kramer's testimony, is that's what he does. So, for example, he talks about, you know, New York Times, Washington Post, The Guardian. And that's when the attacks on me happened. You remember what happened to me probably from previous podcasts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that I once met General Flynn at a Cambridge dinner in England in 2014, right? And that's a work dinner because he comes there. And he was then head of Defense Intelligence Agency for President Obama. And that happens in 2014. And we all sit at the same table. Then General Flynn leaves, and that's it. That's the end, right? And suddenly, in late 2016, early 2017, I suddenly have I'm bombarded with all of those phone calls to the point where one of them, David Ignatius of Washington Post, actually flies to England to see me, and they all accuse me of inappropriate relationship, the affair with General Flynn. And I don't know where it's coming from, right? Because this was, and they all know my name, they all know my email address, they all come at me, the media comes at me within 48 hours of each other. And so that clearly was a coordinated attack after the election. Now, if you look at what Kramer says, if you look at what, you know, Halper does, is that's what they do. They first of all manufacture the story. In this case, Halper manufactures the story that I left the dinner with General Flynn, and he gives it to the FBI. And specifically, he also said that I'm connected to the Russian government. And if you look at the Kramer testimony, when Schiff is asking him questions, he puts that into the context of General Flynn attending a Moscow dinner in December 2015, for which he was being paid a lot of money. That's what Christopher Steele says in his dossier, right? And Halper then tells the newspapers that I am the woman who organized General Flynn's trip to Moscow and organized the funding for it, right? It's not true. None of it is true. But what they do is not only they accuse General Flynn of an extramarital affair with a Russian connected with Russian intelligence, but also that I basically am the person who provided him the Kremlin money, which is the chief allegation in the Steele dossier, right?
Yep.
And so what they do is through Steele, through Halper, through the media, through the FBI, they recycle the same lie, which all of it is a lie, but it comes from all these different sources, and make up that story. And that's where we can see the connection that they, I think, Tracy, you and I, when we were discussing yesterday, I think this is the first time we can link them all up.
Yes.
We can link up Halper with Steele, with the FBI.
And, you know, I was going to say just now, the State Department and the Atlantic Council and all kinds of other swampy organizations that have made their faces known several times throughout this saga, because Kramer was in that crew. Kramer spoke at a roundtable with William Taylor, one of the, you know, quote, star witnesses in the impeachment trial. He spoke at a couple roundtables with them, actually. So these people all know each other.
Well, that's right. That's right. And what's interesting about that is once you kind of know who the characters are, you can track them. So, for example, you know, look what happens to Carter Page. Carter Page gets invited to Cambridge, England, by Stephen Halper after he's been to Moscow, right? Immediately after this trip to Cambridge, Carter Page ends up in the Steele dossier as if he's somehow connected with Kremlin and is taking Kremlin money, right? Immediately after that, after you meet Halper, that's what happens to you, right?
Yeah.
And what's funny is that he gets funny, I mean, in a very horrible way, which is that how coordinated, how organized the whole thing is. He first gets a call from Wall Street Journal, which is a text message, precisely what I had, and then Washington Post, right? So the coordination is just amazing. And both of them come at him with the lies that he met senior Kremlin figures or Russian figures, and then they offered him money. Complete lies. He denies it. But they go and publish anyway. And it's Washington Post and publishes the article. A man called Tom Hamburger, who's closely connected with Fusion GPS. In fact, they call him, Glenn Simpson calls him Fusion GPS founder. He calls him his friend, right? And then in the Tom Hamburger article, in Washington Post about Carter Page. They say that Trump advisor Carter Page has these links to, you know, Kremlin, to Russia, and they quote senior foreign policy experts, including Republican ones, i.e. Halper, which is how he describes himself. Mm-hmm. And then they also quote David Kramer, right, in the same article.
So David Kramer is he presents himself as some bumbling guy who's like in over his head. You can see it in his testimony when you read it, Svetlana. You know what I mean? Like, he presents himself as some like novice who accidentally, inadvertently got himself wrapped up in this big mess. And, you know, he's not used to the scrutiny and attention and blah, blah, blah. But I mean, it's hard to believe that he was just inadvertently duped into all of this.
Yeah. And he was always quoted and he's prepared to go, you know, to go to Congress and under oath to accuse, remember, General Flynn was holder of the highest security clearance in the land. This is, top secret, secure compartmentalized intelligence clearance, right? At the time when they accuse him of spying, basically, you know, been recruited by Russians, right? And David Kramer can just go into Congress and say under oath that this man had this extramarital affair and he's connected with Kremlin money. And all of these characters, and remember that goes to FBI Director Comey, right? Because there's a reason why they have to do it this way. Because remember that Halper and Steele are both paid FBI informers, yep. Which again, think about that. Both of them work for Obama and Hillary Clinton, right? So for the Democrats, for the Democratic leadership. And yet the only two FBI informers on the Russian investigation, paid FBI informers who they hire, are those two people. They're known dirty tricksters. They're known liars. They're known leakers, right? And yet that's what who FBI chooses to provide intelligence for them, so-called intelligence. And then after the election, because remember, the lies were already inserted into the system by Halper before the election and by Steele. But then after the election, they just need to use characters like Kramer to, at the very top level, to independently verify, i.e. basically put their own, he was a senior State Department figure, right? So to make the lies, to try and, as you say, Frank, give them the air of credibility, because lies are completely incredible. And they knew they were lies, but what they needed is they needed surveillance on General Flynn. And so when Comey then receives another so-called verification, i.e. basically repetition of the same lie through Kramer, through McCain, that gives them just the excuse that they wanted. And that shows you the close coordination between the FBI, the DOJ, the State Department, the media, and the Hillary campaign and the Obama administration, which is very, very scary.
Yeah, it's all one big thing. We've got 4 minutes, but I want you to talk about the book real quick, because that's, you know, so important. Everybody can go to your website and buy an electronic copy. It's right there in your hand, spygate-exposed.com. The link will be in the show notes again. It's really great. It's not too long of a read either. Something like 300 so pages, right? Right, Svetlana? It's not overwhelming to read. And it's really, from what I've seen so far, anyway, I haven't finished it, but it's great. What happened? You were supposed to be published through Simon & Schuster. What happened?
Well, that's right. Thank you very much, Tracy. I hope it's a good read, because this is something that, you know, I put my heart and soul in, and I've been only researching this for the last 3.5 years. That's been my life, right?
It's amazing. Like, it's so, but it's so easy to grasp. It's not written in a complicated way. I think people really benefit from reading this book. It's really amazing.
I appreciate that. And the idea here is that the only person who was there at the ground zero, who knows the key characters involved in this, who was there without, of course, realizing that I was in the middle of them plotting the coup. But I was there and I know the characters. So all the great books that are out there, right, they're not written by witnesses. They're written by people who, you know, looked at the bigger picture. Whereas I have, unfortunately, the, an unfortunate advantage where I knew from the beginning that the whole thing was a hoax, because I knew I wasn't a Russian spy. I knew General Flynn wasn't working for Russia. And I knew that the source for that was Halper. And then Halper also laundered his, lies for Christopher Steele. And so that's why my book is a first person account. And I also use my expertise as a historian to explain how those operations are structured. So I think from that perspective, you know, if you want one easy explanation of what happened to your country for the last 4 years and how it affects affected human lives, but also how ultimately it was meant to delegitimize the president. That's the book to read. And that's why I believe Simon & Schuster canceled the book. The book was supposed to come out literally now with Simon & Schuster. And then they canceled it at the last minute, which is kind of fascinating because you can see that they're publishing, obviously, Bolton's book at the moment. They're publishing CNN Brian Stelter's book, which is, you know, but they canceled mine. So they don't want you to read the book. They just don't want you to know this. They're suppressing this book. And so that's why I decided to go my own way, and I decided to self-publish it on my website so everyone can go and download it straight away. So it's spygateexposed.com, because it's very, very important for all of us to learn about what actually happened.
Amen. And Svetlana, you are just a fantastic guest. We always love having you. You're a...
Indeed.
You're a great friend, too. I mean, we don't talk about, you know, so much our personal stuff. We get on the phone for hours and talk about this case. And it's really amazing every time. And I really love you. And I thank you for coming back.
I appreciate that. And the very important work you're doing, because the media is so complicit in this. And it's people like you, Tracy, people like you, Frank, that allow my voice and voices of other people to come through this wall where we've been censored, where we've been blocked. And you just have to keep working. I'm very grateful for all your hard work and commitment.
We'll never stop. And if you want it, you know, listen, these Svetlana and other people who have gone through this need support from us out here. Show everyone that you don't need a huge publishing agency that's political and politicized to get a story like this out. You can go buy her book, support her directly, and go to spygateexposed.com and do that today, guys. So support Svetlana.
And yes, please do.
Hold on a second here. Thank you, Svetlana.
Thank you.
Fantastic interview with Svetlana.
She always hits the spot.
Yeah, for sure. And guess what, guys? We have a new sponsor to the show today, brought to you by HelloFresh. HelloFresh. Now, let me tell a story real quick of how this came about. Okay? I was in Publix, and I happened to see a HelloFresh meal there, and I picked it up, and I was like, wow, and my kids were, like, obsessed with it. And then HelloFresh called and said, we'd like to sponsor your show, Tracy Beans and Frank, quite frankly.
Synchronicity like that.
Yeah. So I was like, you know what? This is great. It's a great option for people. You can get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, which is America's number one meal kit. They let you skip trips to the grocery store, make home cooking fun, easy, and affordable. So many recipes. Low-calorie, vegetarian, family-friendly recipes. Fresh, high-quality ingredients for a flavorful experience. And 90% of ingredients are sourced directly from growers to make sure that the freshest recipes are delivered to your door. You can save time. You can eat more sustainably. It's super flexible. They're committed to giving back, and they actually donated 2.5 million meals to charity in 2019, which is pretty amazing.
It is.
And it's actually a really, really good. So I have a box that I got and I made meatballs, Frank. Did you have the meatballs?
I don't know what it was. The sauce that was really, it killed me. It was amazing.
There's really something on their menu for everybody. It's not all, you know, it's not all eclectic. There's some eclectic stuff in there, but there is something for everybody. And again, my kids love it. And that's really a very important portion because I have to be very careful what I eat. So for me, I'm kind of like boxed in, but I could even have the meatballs. So I was excited.
Well, good for you.
So, super fantastic.
Yes.
Listen, go to HelloFresh.com/darktolight60 and use code darktolight60 to get $60 off your first 3 weeks, including free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Please visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/darktolight60 and use code darktolight60 to get $60 off your first 3 weeks, including free shipping on your first box. What do you say?
Go do it. That's what I say.
Thank you, HelloFresh, for sponsoring the show today. Fantastic stuff. So we got through the Svetlana interview, which was absolutely amazing again. But there's also, I mean, go to SpygateExposed.com and buy this book. It's $20. It's worth every penny. I got through half of it. And again, there's a chapter up on Uncover DC, which you can read. And she's amazing and we support her. So
indeed, she is.
Yeah. So there's that. And then, Frank, I mean, what is going on out there in the world?
What do you mean?
They charged these officers in Atlanta. They charged the officers with murder.
First degree, right?
Yeah.
That means that they left the house that day plotting to take this man down.
This DA is in big trouble.
Yeah, well, it's only going to get worse.
Yeah, this guy, listen, there is a clip of him not even a couple weeks ago saying how, so he said tasers are not a dangerous weapon, a deadly weapon, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he said in his press conference that he gave before they were even done with their investigation. Like, if you were ever going to taint a jury, the best way to do it would be to go out and be a DA, go out and do a press conference with things that aren't even true in front of the entire country.
It's almost like in baseball when the umpires want to inject themselves into part of the game. They just want, they want to be part of the game, a personality. They want to steer the entire game. And you say, you know, can you please just get the hell out of the way? Enforce the rules. But the rules change from week to week. This is what we're looking at. We're looking at lawlessness. We're looking at impunity for so many things. You don't actually have a law if this is the kind of shifty kind of nature that we have to live with right now. Everything is so shifty and political and timely.
Yes, certainly it is. And he's up for re-election, this DA, which is a whole, you know, different story. But he charges these guys, both of them. He says that the one officer decided to testify against the other. Then that officer comes out and says, that's not freaking true. What the hell are you talking about? He also says that one officer kicked him while he was down, which is also false.
I saw them pleading with the guy that they shot to keep breathing.
Yes.
I saw people panicked that this entire before that, I watched one of the most polite DUI stops I have ever seen recorded in all the history. Listen, that we've been able to watch police cams record any kind of interaction with civilians. It all went south so quick. Everybody's fight or flight instincts popped in, and a tragic thing happened. And this is just. I don't know.
It's sickening. And not only that, but, you know, he's on parole, I believe. He was on parole. If he would have just gone with the cops and not tried to get away, where did he think he was going?
Well, you're so intoxicated that you fell asleep online at the Wendy's drive-thru. So as far as what he was thinking and where he thought he was going, who the hell knows? But then again, the same kind of absent-minded behavior that makes you fight two cops, grab equipment off of their utility belts, run, turn around, and fire back is the same reason why you're not considering anything. And you know, so if you're on the other side of that, do you not have to, I don't know, does that not factor into your decision making if you're a police officer or anybody else that's trying to reason or subdue that kind of irrationality in the moment? I don't know. It's very unfortunate. It's unfortunate the whole day. And of course, the way that it's being used is just diabolical.
This guy could go to jail for the rest of his life. He could even get the death penalty. And again, like I was just about to say before we kind of got off topic, just a few weeks ago, this DA, in charging other officers because they used a taser on a group of teenagers or brandished one, I'm not sure exactly, said how deadly of a weapon they were. And now, today, or yesterday, when he does the press conference, he says they're not deadly weapons. Which freaking one is it? I actually found a story about this guy where there was a person who was guilty of armed robbery with a knife. She like brandished a knife at somebody's neck and robbed them and went to jail for it. But it wasn't the first time she had gotten in trouble. Like a week earlier, she had also done the same thing. Anyway, long story short, she was in jail for like a ridiculous amount of time. And her brother was like former FBI. And I could be getting some of the details wrong because I only read through this one time yesterday. And it was right before Mr. DA was going to get reelected. Right. And all of a sudden he has people, he goes to the judge, and he tries to get this woman out of jail and says that the sentence is too harsh and blah, blah, blah. And the judges are like, whoa, hold on a second. Why this person who happens to have friends in government and XYZ and has people connected to police and that, this and that, why is she allowed to get out of this, you know, situation when other people who don't have these means can't? It just lends itself towards corruption. I'm just saying.
Well, this is what we're, and here's this, the, this is what is really bothering me lately. Of course, now, you know, more of the statues and more of the tearing away at American tradition and American history. And I always ask myself, what the hell does a, what is an, even if Donald Trump won all 50 states, how do we wake up on November 4th and the illness, the cultural illness that is driving people to tear the country down physically? Where does that all go? How does that get rectified?
It doesn't.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, where is the real work that needs to be done here? You know, I'm sure that there's plenty of Democrats that go on Facebook and say, oh, the president this and that, the president this and that, are going to go vote for him very secretly. I'm pretty sure, because when push comes to shove, nobody wants to see what they have built in their lives go away. Nobody, when people start talking about, you know, when you start seeing this kind of violence and you start seeing the police run away and all those conspiracy theories that told you, hey, when the shit hits the fan, where the police are going to go? They're going to go home to their families, and then you're going to be left. You know, when they're seeing all these things come true, what's going to happen? I don't know how an election fixes any of this. What do we have to start doing? I don't know.
I know. It's a hard question to answer, but speaking of police going home, they didn't come into work.
I know.
And I think that's fantastic. And I made a tweet. All I said was simply, American citizens, if you haven't as of yet, please arm yourselves. Like 10,000 retweets.
It's good.
25,000 likes. I mean, people are like, I don't know. You know, I've never wanted a weapon before in my entire life, and I just bought this with a picture of their gun. Like, yeah, everybody's.
You have to.
Yeah. No other way. I mean,
listen, and you say I'm happy for the police. No, it's just like you have to. If you're a police officer right now and you live and work in one of those cities, I know it's a hard choice because you probably, you know, you grew up thinking you can live a life one way. It's an opportunity. Maybe you had those idealistic dreams of being able to be a protector of your community or whatever. But the whole point here is that in the current situation that we are in, we know that there is a cultural degradation going on for years and years and years and years. And the worse that society is, and the worse that people act, and the worse that families are splintered, and the worse that everybody becomes more and more dependent on a system, more irrational and more out of sorts, then all of a sudden you're seeing here that what is the flip side of that? There needs to be something that holds that together. So policing becomes more invasive. Policing becomes more necessary. And of course, it becomes a lot more dangerous because disgruntled, disaffected, disillusioned, and disenfranchised people are going to become a lot more uncaring about what they do to themselves, others, police. And then what do you have? A tinderbox scenario where things only get worse. It's a feedback loop that gets worse and worse. So at this point now that you say, okay, well, things are getting bad, it's almost to the point where you need the police, because on the flip side of that, you don't want – they're still telling everybody don't buy guns. Guns are evil. So you can't have both, because then everybody is just exposed.
Well, unless you're in CHOP.
Unless you're in CHOP. But – The last thing I would say on that one is, where do you go? Where do you go with the police now? You have to take a step back, because you don't even have the backing of your media. You don't have the backing of your local officials, who are the ones that create the policy you enforce. You can't be a part of it. You can't be. I mean, just for self-preservation reasons. Depending on what city you work in, you can't be. How do you be a part of that?
You can't, which is why I keep on saying we need to start like a fund to help these people that leave. And you need to arm yourself. Here, listen to the guy from CHOP. Ready? Listen to him. Listen to this.
If you're on the right side, you can leave too. Because this is my block. I have fought for it. You understand?
Wow.
It's my block, Frank. It's mine. Do you hear the whine in his voice?
It's my block. I fought for it.
My block. I have fought for it. You understand?
He's got a little megaphone and he's trying to tell everybody this is his block because he fought for it. It's his block, Frank. This is like the most, I mean, you could make a whole show about just that one little clip. One little clip. And then I wanted to play this one for everybody today because I just heard this. Listen to this little sniveling, little waddling little thing. Listen to this. Ready?
I want to announce that in accordance with what I said this morning, the attending physician of the House has said that it is imperative for the health and safety of people in this room that members wear masks. I would greatly prefer that all present simply uphold the decorum of the committee by complying with reasonable safety standards that are recommended by the attending physician.
Shut up.
And are respectful of all the occupants of this room. I have been greatly lenient today. However, I will tell you now that anyone who is not wearing a mask will not be recognized to speak, period. Who seeks recognition?
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Escobar was next.
Mr. Chairman, a point of parliamentary...
Ms. Escobar is recognized.
Mr. Clintock has tried repeatedly to make his point. Repeatedly.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
Wow.
Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No, it's our side. Had a Democrat speak. It's our
Ms.
turn.
Ms. Escobar has the time. Ms. Escobar
no,
has
she
the
doesn't.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms. Escobar has the time.
I think Mr. Liu just spoke. Yeah, it's the Republicans' turn, and Mr. McClintock has tried now for several minutes to be recognized on a point of order.
But
there's
he's
no
not
point
wearing
of order,
a mask.
But, who seeks recognition to speak?
So hold on. It gets much worse than this. That's why I'm playing the whole thing, because it's really important that you hear this. Jim Jordan is holding a mask in his hand right now. He's not wearing one. He's the ranking member in this committee, okay? He's not a nobody in this committee. He's the ranking member. Nadler, the little waddling little hypocrite, is wearing a mask over his face, surprisingly enough. Hold on.
Chairman, I seek recognition for a point of parliamentary inquiry.
This gentleman will state his point of parliamentary inquiry.
I would like the chairman to cite the House rule requiring members to wear masks in House proceedings. If we had such a vote, I don't recall it. If we have such a vote, I will vote against it, but I will be happy to abide by it if the House so decides. Until then, I would like you to cite me that rule since I obviously missed that vote.
The chair's authority to enforce the preservation of order and decorum during committee proceedings derives from the speaker's enforcement authority under Clause 2 of Rule 1.
See, I want to know who... I'm not done yet. There's more. I want to know who Nadler's little staffers are. Because they literally have their hand up his shirt, Frank, all the time. As a puppet.
He walks on out there and he has a script constantly.
Every time.
For as long as I've been able to watch him lead committee hearings and things like that, he has three or four statements that he relies on as a crutch that are pre-written, that are pre-prepared, and he does not veer away from the script. He is a fat little nothing, and this is why I'm saying, what are our elections going to do?
Well, at the end, he basically says that he's not going to wear a mask because he thinks that it's more to scare people than it is for any other reason, this guy, he says. It's another...
enforcement of general decorum in the respective committees. And I am enforcing...
Mr. Chairman, this has nothing to do with...
Oh, yes,
decorum.
It does. And I'm enforcing general decorum. Decorum means, among other things, the safety of the members of the committee.
All right. Well, then, Mr. Chairman, I move to strike the last word.
The gentleman is recognized.
Thank you. You choose to wear a mask, sir. I do not. I ask you to respect my choice as I respect yours.
It is not your choice
I'm
to
not
obey
God,
the decorum
Mr. Chairman,
of the
house.
It is not your choice.
This is not.
You do not get a choice, Frank. You will bow to me.
Oh, yeah.
Can you believe this?
Oh, yeah, I believe it. This is the slave state that we live in.
Where, before we go, I know you'll have a lot to say about this, but I said yesterday, the left is legitimately bringing back segregation and racism.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, why is it that they are so hell-bent upon removing icons from products that have been cherished by families for years and years and years? Like, that nobody thinks of it. I mean, it's there's no greater compliment than making a black woman or man or white woman or man the face of an entire brand for decades, synonymous with it. For them,
well, because Aunt Jemima, she's not an empowered woman. She has a headscarf on her head, and she was born in the 19th century. And we need to have Nicki Minaj's face. She's an empowered woman.
Or Carly, what's her name?
Cardi B,
yeah.
That's an empowered woman, person that can't even fucking speak. Oh, sorry.
It's okay.
Ugh.
We're an upside down world, Frank. We really are. And to close out today, because it's Friday, there's been a line outside the Tulsa rally for days. Days. People have been sleeping out there. People have been singing. There's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands now, of people outside of that arena to go to the rally. Last night, the mayor of Tulsa implemented a curfew. And these people are sleeping on the street. They don't have places to go. They implemented a curfew. Turns out, the optics of this, I'm telling you, this will be one of the biggest mistakes the left has made so far if this happens. There have been credible threats that groups that have been known to cause violence in other cities are traveling to Tulsa with the specific purpose of causing violence at the Trump rally. And the mayor of Tulsa put out a statement saying that, here, I'm just going to read it really quickly because people didn't understand it at first. Whereas it's an executive order declaring a civil emergency and restricting access, whereas crowds in excess of 100,000 people are expected in the vicinity of the rally during the time frame of June 18th to June 21st, whereas public protests have been planned in response, whereas civil unrest has erupted during and surrounding protests within the city during the month of June, resulting in multiple unlawful assemblies and incidents of violence, whereas civil unrest has erupted throughout the United States, whereas as mayor, I have received information from the Tulsa Police Department and other law enforcement agencies that shows that individuals from organized groups who have been involved in destructive and violent behavior in other states are planning to travel to the city of Tulsa for purposes of causing unrest in and around the rally. They now must secure the perimeter to be able to guarantee safety. So Antifa is coming in to try and beat Trump supporters. I'm sure the left will be proud of this visual. Days of peaceful gathering by the right. And then Antifa comes and all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, well, the president used the word protesters in his tweet from an hour or so ago.
What does he say?
He was addressing exactly what you're talking on here. And he said he included a small list. He said rioters, looters, protesters, low lives, thugs, blood. Because he used the word protesters, people are highlighting that word as saying, look, it's not about just violence. It's about
please.
Suppressing. It's his fault. It's his fault. It really is. You don't know at this point what people are looking to do. You can't just have the foresight to leave that damn word out of the tweet.
Maybe he wasn't thinking about it. Maybe he's a little pissed off. Wouldn't you be?
I
don't
God.
Know. I mean, maybe he just wasn't thinking. He got angry and he's like, these people are not going to F with my people.
I get it.
I agree with you. He should have left that word out. I mean, why leave himself open to that? But the people in the middle don't even care about that at this point. The only people that are reacting to that crap are the crazy left. They're not. Their minds aren't going to be changed if they're not changed by now. If they're not in the middle by now saying, oh my God, what the hell is happening here? There's no hope for them. Leave them behind and ignore them. Anyway.
Yep.
That's it for today. Big thank you to HelloFresh.
Thank you, HelloFresh. And thank you, Svetlana.
Yes. Go to her website, spygate-expose.com. $20 for a great read, which is really entertaining and informative and well done. You have been listening to the Dark to Light podcast with
Friday, sunny Friday, Val, and
Beans.
Enjoy your weekend, Beans.
Yeah. You can hear us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday on TuneIn, Stitcher, Apple iTunes, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and RadioInfluence.com. And happy First Father's Day-ish, Frank.
Oh, boy. Actually, you know what's funny? Lauren went to go to another appointment today, and she sent me some more ultrasound pictures. And yeah, she was hiding her face today. Aurora was with her. She was hiding behind her feet and her hands. I said, "What is she, a cat?"
Aww.
I said, "How the hell does she do that?" I said, "She's very flexible." Okay.
Well.
All right.
There you go. She's got to cram herself into that little space.
She didn't get the flexibility from me. That's for sure. I had to work at it. I have to work very, very hard at it. It has never been easy for me.
We will see you guys on Monday. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. We'll see you on Monday.
Bye.
Hey, everybody. It's Ashley Jarocki and Stephanie Marchese, and we host Live Bold and Boss Up. We are business owners, mommies, and alumni NFL cheerleaders here to discuss our experiences, share challenges, and successes. So whether you're a business professional on the way up in your career, a recent college grad, or maybe you're content where you are, but you feel you can do better or do more, then listen up. We're having meaningful conversations with decision makers in the workplace, such as CEOs, entrepreneurs, and much more. Get ready to boss up. Make sure to check us out and subscribe to Live Bold and Boss Up on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn Radio, the iHeartRadio app, and RadioInfluence.com.